All right, hello again, and welcome to Comics Rule Everything Around Me, a podcast within a podcast about comics, which is part of handles the things that we love and, you know, life and stuff. With me today is my good buddy Matt.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about some recent comics. A lot of notable new releases lately. We're going to get into stuff that we've got, because, man, I've got some takes on some of these. Some of it will be stuff that we have both read. Some of it will be stuff that only one of us has read.
Right.
We've got some good stuff. I think we got some bad stuff, or less good, I'll say. I'll try to keep it positive. We got a bunch of stuff to talk about. So, Matt, I'll let you jump in here first, and unless you don't want me to, unless you'd rather me go first since I've got this list in front of me. Let's talk about something good. And I do have some specific stuff that I want to ask you about, specifically to get your take on. What's something recent, like a new release that you're wanting to talk about?
I'd be good to talk about Grant Morrison's new Green Lantern.
Okay, series. That'd be great. Now with this one, I've only read the first issue, and I think people know that I am a gigantic Grant Morrison fan. Mm-hmm. He is my favorite comics writer.
Yeah, I don't think I knew that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, hey, he made All-Star. he wrote All-Star Superman.
Yeah.
He wrote the best.
So him, Mark Wade, in your top five?
For sure. It's weird, though. It's, you know, there are some things. Mark Wade is definitely one of my all-time favorite comic writers. But I've had some ups and downs. I've had some ups and downs with him recently.
More recently. I can see that.
To the point where I have not had the same kind of ups and downs with Grant Morrison.
Right.
Most of my Grant Morrison reading, I would say, like, way more, much more up.
Right.
And even the stuff that was sort of a down for me were things that were like, I think this just wasn't exactly for me. It's not like I think it's mm-hmm. bad. I don't think I'm smart enough to get this.
That's often.
I think this is I need to reread this a few more times and try to figure it out. But I don't find myself rolling my eyes when I read Grant Morrison comics.
Sure. I also love Grant Morrison. I'm not like read everything he's ever written, but everything I have read of his, I've really, really loved.
Yeah. And with this Green Lantern, this is one of the ones I had on the list. Have you read there's only two issues.
There's only
out
two
so
issues.
Far.
The second one, just came out last week.
So have you read the second one yet?
Yes.
Okay. I've only read the first issue. And and I will let you then go however you want from that. I was just gonna say my biggest takeaway from it was I'm always excited about a new Grant Morrison book, especially a new Grant Morrison book that's like with a character he hasn't really done a lot with before, and that's like a big, you know, a big two mm-hmm. Character, somebody like when they announced that he's going to be doing Green Lantern, I was like, oh man, I'd love to see how this goes.
Yeah.
And the biggest takeaway I had from it was that it was like, it didn't really feel that first issue. I feel like I barely remember what happened in it. It was just like, it was not that remarkable to me. And it wasn't bad. It was like, it was perfectly fine, but I didn't quite feel that spark of Grant Morrison
sure
in it yet.
Yeah.
And I haven't read the second issue yet. But I'm certainly down to read this book for as long as he's on it to see where it goes. And mm-hmm. hopefully it won't be a thing that becomes the first real sort of like low point for me with Grant Moore. I don't think it will.
So I'd said that I'd loved everything I'd read by him. I think there have been some books that are stronger than others, definitely.
Yeah.
His Action Comics didn't quite hit me. It had its moments, but
I think it was hindered by a number of other
sure.
things.
Yeah. But so with this book, and I'm trying to even remember, I've probably even said on this podcast before, I've wanted Grant Morrison to write a Green Lantern type book for a long
time.
A big
space epic.
Yeah, I think was specifically first started getting my mind running that way was when reading the when DC started collecting the works, DC works of Alan Moore into mm-hmm. some of these collections, where you see reading Alan Moore's stories, his little kind of one-offs here and there about the Green Lantern Corps, these little short stories where you're dealing with, you're getting away from Earth, you're out in the depths of space. No idea is too wild because it's aliens, it's new cultures. She got just some crazy, wild ideas that showed up in those books. And I know, you know, Grant Morrison's got big respect for Alan Moore, you know, modeled a lot of his storytelling after that. And in some places, maybe some ways he's even surpassed and the ways he does some things. But reading those Alan Moore Green Lantern Corps stories made me think, man, a Grant Morrison run on a Green Lantern Corps book where he just got to go wild with these far out characters would be so, so good. And so I feel like suited to his sensibilities. Like, I think the biggest thing that I'm like kind of about with this book is that Hal Jordan's the focus.
Right.
I would love it to be Green Lantern Corps and not a Hal Jordan book. Cause then he could, I feel like, really lean hard into what he does well. And for me, the best part of these first two issues have been not Hal Jordan. Like, man, we've seen so much Hal. We've seen it. And his Hal is fine. I mean, it's good. It's not particularly remarkable.
It seems kind of like just standard Hal, though.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's just so he doesn't get the character wrong. He just gets him like you've seen him. If you know Hal Jordan, he does a fine job with Hal. Where the book excels, though, is these crazy characters and concepts he's pulling in. He's got, for instance, he got a Green Lantern there, which again, I know that other writers have touched on this a little bit. I know Jeff Johns, I think, had one of his various cores. There was like a bacterium lantern or something. Right. But like Grant Morrison takes that and he plays it out as a whole concept where like this little bacteria Green Lantern infects a guy, gets him sick. And he takes the idea and runs with it in ways that only Morrison can.
Yeah.
Seeing him play in that space, he's setting up a mystery, you know, with this news. So I, what you're saying about the first issue, not necessarily grabbing you. I think, I can see that in the sense that it's a lot of groundwork being laid for a mystery and you don't know what the mystery even is by the end of the first issue.
Yeah.
It's not even, you don't know who done it. You don't know what done it or what was done.
You don't know what it is.
Yeah. You don't know who did it or why it matters or anything.
Yeah.
But into the second issue, you start to get that. As Hal's tracking down clues and
okay, I was going to ask. Together. Yeah, I think that Morrison's big, you know, sort of hook for him to get in with the character is that like Hal has really gotten away from being a space cop, mm-hmm. which is like the idea that when Green Lantern first came out, and of course I mean the Silver Age version, not the Golden Age version, which is Hal Jordan, the easy sell premise of that character, that like the elevator pitch for it is like. There's a guy with a space cop with a magic wish ring that can basically do whatever he wants. And
that's a great premise, by the way.
Great premise.
Absolutely
yes.
Great premise.
You don't, you know, it's like you don't have to rethink the wheel for some of these great premises. You just need to go like, all right, what can I do with this? And so I'm definitely on board to see what he does with it and see how it goes. But I was going to ask if you feel like more by the second issue, you're kind of like wrapped into it a little more.
I definitely want to keep going.
Okay.
I want to see where it goes. There's a couple things he's scratched the surface of that I'm curious if he'll go deeper on. So one thing, and he even makes there's even a joke. I think it was in that. I don't know what other DC book it would have been in that I read recently, but it jokes back. It makes a joke about Hal's past as a toy salesman. Because that first issue of his Silver on the cover is he's like selling toys or something. And it makes a joke about he had a short career doing that.
Yeah.
But the thing that excited me that I didn't know he was going to be touching on. So big picture DC stuff that's going on right now is the Dr. Manhattan has messed with the timeline of the DC universe. He's removed years. And so the one of the Guardians of the Universe takes Hal to the Book of Oa, and they're like, you know, we opened the Book of Oa last week, and somebody changed it. Like there's. That doesn't happen. Like, so that mystery maybe is also something that's going to get played out. What is the stuff Dr. Manhattan's done? How does that affect this big, broad other side of the DCU?
That gets me excited about this, but it also does go a little bit against that thing we were talking about in a different episode of a different show, which is the idea of the, hopefully everyone listens to all of these and doesn't just pick and choose, which they're like, oh, I don't like when they talk about comics. I just want to listen to Keep It Close to Me. but if you do that, it's fine.
Yeah.
That thing though of now that you're telling me it ties into some bigger event, now I'm more interested.
Yeah. And I don't know how loosely, if it's going to, who knows? And certainly he's been on plenty of books that have had to tie in, and
yeah.
And if he can choose how much or how little he ties in, and cause it was a hook for me in that first issue. Like that was one of the things that, oh, I want to know more.
Yeah.
More than, it's going to tie into this, but yeah, first two issues. I like it. What's the artist's name on that book?
Liam Sharp.
Liam, his art, isn't the biggest selling point for me. It's Same. Definitely interesting. There's interesting stuff happening on the page. He's not one of my favorite artists. Maybe he'll grow on me. There are definitely interesting things happening on that page. But he's not.
Yeah. He's not a draw for, he's definitely an artist who I think is a good artist, but he is not who I would have thought to put on this. But I mean, maybe that's good. Maybe that's where Grant Morrison is going mm-hmm. with it. Maybe it's going to play more into it.
There's a few big splash pages that you're like, oh, I can see.
Yeah.
Maybe this is some of his strengths here.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there somebody, does anybody like kind of leap to mind to you as who you would have preferred to see on this?
Oh man.
I mean, and none of this is this is not at all to.
So what's tough with that one is.
This is not to like denigrate his skills at all. Cause I think he really is a good artist.
And there's a splash page in the second issue. I think it's the second issue where they go to Oa, mm-hmm. Which is the capital planet, you know, the precinct or whatever for the Green Lantern Corps. And this is a big double page splash, and it is just amazing. It made me think of Mike Allred on Silver Surfer, one of those first few issues of Silver Surfer. They go to that planet, and it's just this big double page, double page splash, a double splage.
Yeah, one of those.
That's so wild and complex that you're just like, wow. That's what this is like when they go to Oa, and I'm like, yeah, you know what? I can see why people would like him.
Yeah.
And this is definitely interesting to look at. It's not boring. Who would be an ideal artist on that? What's tough for me with that question is we've had so many great artists on Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps in the past that my brain just goes man, I really like how he drew it or how they drew it.
Like, and who, I mean, well, who leaps to mind for that?
And maybe just because of how he's worked with Morrison in the past, the Doug Monkey definitely came to mind.
That's definitely the first name I thought of because he's Doug Monk is like the quintessential can draw anything and make it look incredible mm-hmm. artist. He's like a guy and he's never going to be late. He's never, and it always looks just so powerful. He gives like everything such a you feel how the weight of these characters. Like there's a real three-dimensionality to like I feel like there's this episode. Oh boy. There's this issue of Green Lantern during Blackest Night where Martian Manhunter comes back from the dead. Mm-hmm. And he's fighting Barry and Hal, and I'm just like, man, you really feel like I know exactly how thick Martian Manhunter's giant muscly arms are.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
I remember that issue. Those action sequences are insane.
He drops a building on him, but like, there's he does everything so mm-hmm. well, and it was like, as much as I enjoyed J.G. Jones on Final Crisis, as soon as they had to toss it over to Doug Monk, not only did it come out on time, but I was like, I completely get it looks different, but I get what's going on so right. much. It's like he can take someone like Grant Morrison, same deal like with Frankenstein with Seven Soldiers. He can take Grant Morrison's like really crazy ideas and pull them off in mm-hmm. a way where you get all of the information that you need to get that Grant Morrison's wanting you to get, but it also, you never get lost in it. You never get lost in what's going on. And it's just like, oh man, so good. But at the same time, I'm like, let me try to think of someone who's like a little bit more, who hasn't?
I mean, in the same way that
and Doug Monk has done
drawn Monk, by someone other than Rags Morales. You know, maybe I would have liked
if that whole thing had been by. And well, of course, my dream thing would have been for it to be by Chris Somney. But if that whole thing had been by Doug Monk, it would have been amazing. I think it would have read a lot better than there was some real. That would be a whole nother conversation.
Yeah.
And Doug Monk has done so much Green Lantern. I'm kind of like,
I can picture it exactly.
Yeah, but I'm like, so let's who's someone
somebody
that
new.
That is maybe not as unexpected a choice, but they could pull off this stuff. That's the thing. It's like you've really got to have your business together, I think, to pull off doing a Grant Morrison book.
Yeah, because he's pulling in some wild stuff. Like, you can be a good artist, and that doesn't mean you're going to be suited towards what he's trying to pull.
Yeah, and it's like there. Unfortunately, I feel like he has been a lot of times saddled with artists who I'm like, man, this could be an all-time great story, and it's not, because it's like it's still good, but it's like there's stuff in there where I'm like, I feel like the artist, I'm not going to name any names.
Sure.
Though I could, one specifically leaps to mind, but, you know, it's, I don't like to trash people. I know they're working hard, and I know how hard it is to, I mean, just from, not just from like my limited experience. I mean, it's just when you've been into comics as long as we have and following them, and it's like, you know, what a grind and real labor of love.
Each doing page comics. You're looking at, that's like a whole day and a half of someone's life.
If not more. I mean, depending on what, but yeah.
Multiple someone's, because there's not, it's not just the penciler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Dylan Burnett is the artist on Cosmic Ghost Rider, which is a book we have not talked about yet, but that I have been dying to talk about because I...
Well, do you want to talk about it now?
We can.
Or did you have anything else about Green Lantern?
No, not really. I mean, I just want to say, but he's an artist who I was like, I love his art on Cosmic Ghost Rider so much. I'm like, and it's all like crazy and in outer space, but he's also still drawing, like, you know, Cable and some people show up at one point, and it's like, it still looks very comic booky, and like, you can get the superhero vibe off of it, but he does some great stuff. It's just, his art is a lot of fun, and definitely, I can't remember who the colorist is on it. But I could look.
That's another thing. Not every artist can draw outer space.
Yeah.
Like some artists are great at figure drawing, faces, you know, earth scenery stuff. They really excel. But some artists have trouble nailing outer space where you just got panels that are stars and planets and big black spaces. And
Antonio Fabella is the color artist on there with him. And the two of them are one heck of a team. Because, man, that book, I love it. I didn't know anything about the character because I hadn't read Donnie Cates' run on Thanos yet. I saw the book, the first issue at the store, and picked it up, and the art immediately just grabbed me. And I was like, oh, okay, I have to get all of this. This is so good. You know, it's like this. But then a nice, you know, side effect is the fact that the book is great.
Yeah.
It's so well written. And then I went and after I read that first issue, then I went and read Donnie Cates' run on Thanos.
It was just like five or six issues in an annual, right?
I think it's maybe a few more than that.
He took over at issue 13. I think it went to issue 18. And then he got
it. Is that all? It seemed like more to me.
I only know because I just read 1 through 12. I read Jeff Lemire's run on Thanos. Because I want to read those books.
The Donnie Cates. Well, what did you think? I haven't read the Jeff Lemire stuff. What did you think of it?
It's good. It's
because the Donnie Cates stuff is great.
Yeah, it's good, but so it's 12 issues and it's very self-contained in the sense that everything that happens in there, if you pick up that book, you're going to have a good time. It's an interesting story. But if you never pick up that book, you're not going to be missing out on anything in Thanos' life because when I say self-contained, the characters by the end of the 12th issue are in the exact same place that they were in the first issue. It does a big circle, basically.
Okay.
That the rise and fall, or the fall and rise of Thanos kind of thing. Okay. Like, it takes him to a big low, but then by the end of his arc, he's back where he started. So it's like, you almost don't need it. So I hate to say that. It was good, but...
Well, and to me, I'm like, honestly, it's fine. So this is like kind of getting into a whole different thing, but like a lot of times I find myself sort of trying to justify spending the time, you know, as you have more and more responsibilities in life, mm-hmm. your free time, your like leisure time starts coming at, you know, starts being more and more precious. And I find myself oftentimes not able to just sit and enjoy something that, I mean, and maybe this gets to the thing of like why people want the comics that they're reading to tie into these big events and stuff, because you want it to seem like it matters.
Right.
Because you're having to spend this precious time of your life doing it, and you don't want to waste it on something that you feel like is just like, just it's whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. And you start worrying about like, what does this matter? And things like that. I don't know. It's a weird kind of headspace.
I think it's too a little bit like, okay, you've got this event happening that's supposed to be doing all this to the whole world. We're not even going to mention it in this book. Like it's not even going to come up. And, but then it goes from mentioning it to now it's 3 issues or 5 issues or 6 issues that we've got to tie into it.
Yeah. But I find myself, you know, there's shows that I want to watch and I'm just going like, yeah, I really do want to watch that, but I'm like, shouldn't I spend that time doing something that's like more, it's just kind of like if it's like a show that's just like, yeah, that show looks good and I've heard good things about it, but I don't think anything about it is like really, you know, like transformative mm-hmm. or whatever, you know, something that's really going to be a big, it's going to really feel like it's worth the investment of my time. But on one of our previous episodes, I was talking about I've been rewatching Batman the Animated Series.
Right.
Last night, I started watching. I got the complete series set of the Adam West Batman on Blu-ray because on one of the you know, Thanksgiving or, you know, Black Friday deals or something, was they had it super cheap.
Right.
And I was like, this is too cheap now for me to ignore. I was like, I wanted it anyway, but now this is like so ridiculously cheap. I have to get it. So I got
a complete series or just
the entire series, all 3 seasons. And in one big box. And that's like season 1. You can see there. And this thing looks absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. Like all of this stuff. Like, look at that. Come on. I would love a bigger framed picture of this. There's picture of Alfred in here. You know, and each season's a whole bunch of episodes. I started watching this last night, and one, it is so good in a way that I was not anticipating. Like, just from the first episode, it's so bonkers that I'm like, I can't believe this was on TV, sort of. It's just like, this is so strange and like out there. And like, I get why this was, it's like, I could get why this would be a huge hit now. Like, if this came on Adult Swim now, it would be like Rick and Morty or something, I think. Like, if it had just come out and we'd never known about it before, people would be like, this show is crazy. Can you believe this? You know, but it's hard for me to imagine this being on a thing that was on TV in the 60s. But it's also, it's like, there's a lot of stuff to it where it's like, clearly they knew what they were doing and it's not just like dumb. But that was the thing where I turned that on and I started just, it was so enjoyable. And I was going like, man, I'm having so much fun watching this, even though it is not something that, it doesn't matter. It's like every, you know, episode is just kind of, most of them are like two-parters, but it's like, you know, every little story is just, here's the thing with Batman.
You don't have to watch this to understand something else, or it's going to increase your enjoyment of something else. It's just, you enjoy it for what it is.
I was just like, I'm having so much fun watching this. And I'm going like, man, I need to start doing that more often and just letting stuff be fun and not being worried about. But that ties back to what we were talking about with this stuff, because that Cosmic Ghost Rider book, that was the biggest takeaway I came away with after like reading the first like 2 issues. I was just like, I got done reading it and I was like, oh, I had fun reading this.
Right.
I was like, so many comics I read now, I'm just like, either it's like, yeah, that was good, or I hated it. Or, you know, it's whatever.
You're just kind of grinding through it.
Yeah.
But it's like in video games when you just got to grind for a while to get your... Some reading is... So I'm not really enjoying it, but I just feel like I kind of have to get through it.
But I want
to
know what happens. Yeah. It's like, I want to know what happens. And I'm like, yeah, okay, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Or I'm like, yeah, the art in this is great. But I was... That Cosmic Ghost Rider, and this is like, I think, I wish more comics tried to do this, because it never seems like it's not. It's not like it. I mean, I guess it's kind of not. There's some stuff where it doesn't take itself too seriously, mm-hmm. but it's not like it's just.
It's not a joke book either.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, but there's parts in it that are funny. I mean, and it's a comic called Cosmic Ghost Rider. but I was really reading it, going, like, I'm having fun. I feel like I am happy and having a good time reading this.
Yeah. Do you read all five issues?
No, I have not. I've kind of been saving, like, trying to parse it out, because I'm like...
I was just curious, because I know it's a limited...
Yeah, and
I
don't know which is unfortunate.
...continue to do with it after.
Yeah, and I don't know how it ends, okay. So I don't... But that's a guy who I think would be... His art is so fun, and especially with that, it's like the comic is so colorful, and like... The art style is just great, and the two of them work together really well. That's who I think I would have enjoyed seeing maybe on this book.
Okay.
Just to see what a difference it might possibly make.
Yeah.
That would be my point. But also, I'm like kind of so into the two of them right now. Like, as a team, there's a lot of stuff where
I'm going. Put them on everything.
Put them on everything.
Yeah.
Speaking of a book, I'll say another book that was a new release last week. That I also have an issue where I'm like, boy, I would rather this. I think this artist, though a very good artist, an artist that I definitely respect and think is a great artist, but not a good fit, is Shazam number one.
I read that one too. Yeah.
Written by Jeff Johns, mm-hmm. art by Dale Eaglesham, who I think he was great on Fantastic Four with Jonathan Hickman.
Great on JSA with Jeff Johns. That's where I think I first got introduced to him.
And JSA. I totally get when you've got somebody like that you want. I'm sure Jeff Johns feels safe trusting his scripts for this with him.
And safe is a good word for it. Yeah.
He trusts. I'm sure there is a level of trust between the two of them that he feels like this is definitely going to. This will work out. Mm-hmm. He's going to get what I'm going for. And I'm sure, like, when you work with people for, you know, for an extended period of time, it's nice to know, like, you know, you develop that kind of like shorthand mm-hmm. of like, I know I can just tell him this and he'll get what I'm going for. But I like, his art is definitely not bad at all, but I just do not feel like it matches the tone of the story. I feel like a lot of artists sort of struggle with drawing young people.
Yeah.
When they're used to drawing like big superheroes. And I think he gets the superhero.
Tiny adults.
He gets the superhero stuff well. And it's not like he is not the worst offender. I wouldn't even say he's an offender, because he handles it pretty well. Mm-hmm. But I feel like and also, I think this is like a big book with, you know, I think this is a book that they're planning big things for as far as with it coming out. I guarantee that the first trade of this will be out in time for the movie. Yeah.
No, that's exactly why it's coming out now.
And I guess maybe that's the kind of thing where they're like, we know that he will not be late. We know he's going to turn out solid work. We're going to have it all out on time, in time for the movie.
Whereas with, was it Gary Frank that he was, he was doing, he's so,
I mean, look at how behind Doomsday Clock is.
Yeah.
You know, and it's unfortunate because there's like so much tied up in that. And it's hard to understand how these guys who are like at that level, how can it be? I wonder how some of these people can get to that level where it's like they were turning stuff out. You have to have been consistent mm-hmm. for, you know, a good bit of time to get to the level that someone like Gary Frank is at.
Right.
And then it's like, and who knows?
They go through phases. You've got, you know, Brian Hitch, you know, for a while it took him. He was the one that people would joke about it takes forever to get a book out. But then all of a sudden he flipped the switch and now he's cranking it out.
And their
quality is still
Hawkman,
good.
Yeah. And that's a book I don't know if we've talked about at all, but I have enjoyed what I've read of that Hawkman. Very surprising to me. I was not expecting to enjoy it.
I've not checked it out yet. Issue 7 came out today and people are raving about it. So I'm like, okay, I got it.
Really? About the whole series or about that issue?
So issue 7, I guess, is the start of the second arc. And about that specific issue, people are really
interesting
about.
All right. I'm not caught up on it. I'm only like a couple issues in. But the issues that I have read, I've been like, this is great.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I would totally recommend it if you're interested in Brian Hitch's art, or if you're interested in like a pretty good Hawkman comic, which I don't know how many of those.
Yeah, there. You don't got a lot of those.
Yeah, from. I don't know how many of those there are. No, what were we talking about?
We've gone from
Shazam,
number one. Yeah.
Also, I'm realizing, you know, this basically picks up from the New 52 version of Shazam.
Right.
Which is odd because the universe has been
rebirthed,
but we're still doing the New 52 version of Shazam. And as much, I'm sure this is going somewhere. I think that ultimately that New 52 Shazam, you know, is like a backup in
backups in Justice League.
And, but it was big enough for an entire big trade.
Yeah. I think it was a backup story in like, 6 issues of Justice League.
I think it was more than that.
And then they did a special to where now it can be collected in a trade as its own thing.
Okay. The
special was oversized.
Okay.
Yeah.
I only read it as a trade. And I started off not liking it. I was like, I don't like this version of Billy. I don't like this sort of like, I am kind of like not into, and Shazam is the lock screen on my iPad and on my phone. I love Shazam, Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of my favorite characters since I was a little kid. I love so much, but I loved the Convergence 2 issues of him that Doc Shaner got to draw.
I like this too.
So good. I loved the Thunderworld issue of Multiversity, Grant Morrison and Cameron Stewart.
That's who I want to see on an ongoing. I just want that.
Man. Yeah.
I want Thunderworld to keep going.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. If Thunderworld
if that was going, the first issue of a real ongoing.
It's like literally though, like cover of Thunderworld is my
perfect.
It's perfect. It's absolutely perfect.
And then the Monster Society of Evil.
The Jeff Smith one.
Jeff Smith.
That was my next. Yeah. I absolutely love that. I reread it all the time as a thing where I'm just going like, this is such cool. And I'll put the video in the show notes. There's an awesome video essay I just watched recently. A guy did about that, like how Jeff Smith's Shazam, why it works and like what, you know, what's fun about it. And, if you've never read it, I think watching this except for the fact that it spoils everything, is definitely worth watching. And I think it'll make you want to read the comic. His art's great. So I love Shazam. All that is to say, I love Shazam.
He's a great character.
I did not like where that started. But by the end of that New 52 Shazam, I liked it. I liked the way that it, by the time we got to the end of it, I was like, that was a good story. They won me over. But then this starting straight from that, it's just like, it feels like it needed to be, it's a new number one. It feels like way too much. It's very dependent on you having read that other thing.
And a lot of time has passed since that's come out.
Yeah, it's been a long time since, and I'm sure they're going, again, they're thinking about all of this.
They'll have the trade at Barnes & Noble on sale right next to this trade. So.
Yeah, they'll have this out. They'll have the Jeff Smith thing. All of this stuff will be easy to get a hold of very soon.
Which is a plus, good, yeah.
Which is great. But I'm just like, it really takes something of the specialness away from Billy, this character, when you're immediately, there's 7 Shazams.
Yeah. To have that in the very first issue,
I'm like,
there's
okay,
a whole crowd of them.
And especially like, you know, the movie's not going to have all 7 of them.
Probably
the,
not.
The movie's going to be about Shazam. Like, make this book about Shazam. Or, I mean, I know that they just did that other thing and they want that to be a thing that sells still, so it's like they kind of want this new series. It sucks when
it's tough, man. They've got themselves in a corner.
Yeah, when you start thinking about the business, when we're trying to talk about these things and we just want to like focus on the art of making comics, the creative side, and you realize though, and that's why it's so hard for these companies, I think, is when you start realizing that there's all these business factors that come into play about, we've got to deal with this movie, we've got to deal with this, that, or the other thing that corporate's wanting us to do. And it just, holy moly, what a bummer.
Yeah. I don't love the new costume designs. I wish they could have stuck with the classic ones.
I'm cool with it. In that, with just for Billy.
I don't like, yeah, I guess the energy stuff coming out of his chest. It's just like, it's kind of,
I'm fine with it.
Kind of weird.
Yeah. It's grown on me though. That's the thing is I wasn't a big fan when it first, but it's been long enough now. And Gary Frank does it in a way that, like, you know, there's two covers on that first issue. Mm-hmm. And one is like the regular one where it's like Billy in class as Shazam. And it's like, that's fun. We get it. Mm-hmm. He's a kid. But then the other one is just a Gary Frank one where it's just Shazam, like up in the sky smiling and there's like clouds and whatever.
I don't know if I saw that one. I think I saw the one where he's in the classroom.
Let me show you real quick. This is what people are here for, to listen while I find something. Just very fun.
Yeah, that looks cool.
And it, like, when he does it, I get more of that feeling of what they're going for with it.
Why do you think they changed it?
As far as, why they made this?
Yeah, going back to when they
New changed 52? Him
from the New 52.
Yeah, because it was New 52. Everybody's got to get a new costume. I mean, who didn't get a new costume?
Yeah.
Literally everyone had to get a revamp. And I'm sure that they were thinking about this because the movie costume is clearly
more like that.
Is a take on this.
Whereas, but in the comics now, Rebirth, we're going back to the classic costumes.
Yeah.
Superman's back in his, Batman's back in his.
With some little tweaks. I mean, there is some stuff, you know, like, anyway, I think I've kind of gotten to my gripes with it as far as it being like, I don't think he's the best fit for it. I don't like that there's all these other kids. And it's like, you're stuck. I mean, it is that thing that you're stuck where they still want to sell that other trade because it's the one they've already gotten. They already spent the money on it. And it's like a thing. Okay. So we kind of have to go from that, but it ends with all of a sudden here's a whole, mm-hmm. which kind of makes me go, maybe you should have just focused on Billy.
Yeah.
And then you wouldn't be in this issue net in this.
Yeah. They've kind of got themselves situation. In the corner with having a whole family of characters. And the idea of the Captain Marvel family, that definitely is a classic concept, you know, having Captain Marvel and Captain Marvel Jr. and Mary.
But not many.
To have seven of them, like, it dilutes it.
Yeah.
Also, the other thing they run into is the constant problem for the character is the Captain Marvel Shazam branding. Okay, we're going to call him Shazam instead of Captain Marvel, but what do you call the Captain Marvel family? Because they don't just call him the Shazam family. And in fact, a big point of the issue is they're arguing, what should our team name be?
The Lightning League.
Yeah, that whole thing.
The Thunder Buddies. I don't know.
Thunder Buddies.
But I don't think that the full problem, I don't want to put, this is a book that I feel like I've been waiting for a long time. I feel like I've spent most of my comic reading life waiting for Shazam to get the place, to get his moment in the spotlight mm-hmm. in the way that I think the character deserves. Because man, this is a character that, you know, when he came out, put DC on the ropes. And the only way they could beat him was to sue him out of existence and then buy him later.
Yeah.
Like, this is the character that was on track to, like, Superman might have gone out of business, basically. And as much as I don't want to see that happen, really the only reason Shazam didn't keep going and being more popular is because DC sued him out of existence. Mm-hmm. Which they were like, we can't make comics outsell his. So the only thing we have left is, you know, lawyers. And this is back in the 40s or whatever. So,
right.
But I mean, it's just crazy to think about that. And so this is a character who I think deserves to be one. Talk about a movie that I hope please be good. Please, please be good.
Yeah.
And because I want it to be good, I want this character to get all of the credit and acclaim and love that he deserves. The whole world and the mythology of Shazam, Captain Marvel is like so rich and it's got so much fun stuff you can do with it. And that stuff shines through in that Thunderworld. Mm-hmm. The Multiversity was like a thing that I loved, but it was also like the worst, most so it was such... I hate to keep going back to it being a bummer, but it was like, it was so disheartening and just like, oh, that all of these, all of them, all of the issues were these awesome ideas.
You feel like a little bit of a tease. Like they were not.
Yes, it was the biggest tease in the world because I'm like, I want to read this every month.
Or does it go back? Well, of course, it's Grant Morrison. So we think, well, he's a genius. He could probably do an ongoing for each of these. But does it also go back to the idea of, man, let's just distill one awesome story.
Yeah. But I think with a lot of writers, I would go, they probably, this was their one idea.
Yeah.
I think Grant could
He probably could have kept going.
I think Grant could do, you know, 5 years of Thunderworld if he wanted to. If he wanted to put his mind, especially with Cameron Stewart, because they worked together so well. And like,
yeah.
Anyway, but I'll say this is like, so there's a lot of problems here that I know I can't just pin. It's not just because of the comic itself.
Right, there's a lot.
There's a lot going on. But I will say the backup in it.
Yeah, the Mary Marvel
backup
story.
With art by Mayo Sen Naito. I have no idea if I'm pronouncing that right. This is a person who is like, got to be one of the biggest Shazam fans on the internet. This person who's drawn like so much fan art and done so much
stuff. I didn't
know
that side of the story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's neat that they
This is like a person they found from being like, and I'm pretty sure it's a she. I don't know for sure because I, and it's not important, but I just don't want to get it wrong.
Right.
I think they're also then because of like all this fan art they have done, you know, ended up getting the job and had done other things. I think they also, used this person to, translate the New 52, Shazam book into Japanese.
Oh, interesting.
For like hired them, like, cause you're such a big Shazam fan, you'll get what's going on. And then this person's also doing one of the DC Zoom or DC Inc. books.
Do you know which one?
I can't remember. I can see like some of the promo art, but I can't remember what book it's actually for. But that part of the book, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is such a great fit for this world.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
A much, much better fit than the Dale Eaglesham version. And I'm like, why not
have... Do you have some of the art there?
Yeah, like...
Yeah.
So great. And like...
Reminds me a bit of Gurihiro.
Yeah.
Which, again, would be perfect for that kind of book.
Yes. And this is the kind of thing where I'm going like, hey, you know what? You put this in bookstores, kids are probably going to respond to this
jump off the shelves.
Way better.
A kid would, yeah.
Kids who love, you know, who don't see a delineation, who are not worried about the delineation necessarily between American comics and manga or anime or whatever. It's like, you put this on the cover, I think it's going to sell way more at Barnes & Noble than the
Dale Eaglesham
cover or like the Gary Frank cover. I think kids are just going to see that and they're go, oh, that movie was fun. He's doing the floss and dance in the trailer. I want to see that, you know, like, and it fits like these kids look like kids. And like when they change into their Marvel,
yeah, that looks awesome.
Their Captain, their Mary Marvel. And I don't remember what her name is. It looks way more like, yeah, these are kids who are getting to be superheroes. And it looks so fun and it looks so cool. But also, their costumes don't look like just all the exact same costume. Like, they're, and I think that they're, in the Dale Eaglesham part of the book, I was like, it's basically all the exact same costume. And maybe as it goes, they'll like get more individualized. But I think that they all have kind of different stuff that is their thing. So they should all have... Don't make them all look like just color-coded versions of the same suit. Like, give them all their own sort of unique looks. And I mean, really, like, flipping through it, I was like, oh, it's just the same book. But then I saw this, and I was like, oh, no, there's more difference in their costumes than it seemed like.
Do you know if that's just something they did for the first issue, or if they're going to be backups?
Boy, I really hope that it's in every issue. Because
I didn't even think about it, because sometimes they'll inflate a first issue with some of that content to make it a little bigger, but...
And speaking of that, I have something to talk about on a different book.
Okay.
Especially speaking of inflating the, but go ahead. Let's finish
no,
up.
No, anyway, I would like to see them continue to.
I would recommend checking it out if you're interested in Shazam.
Yeah. It seems like Geoff Johns has an idea to flesh out some of the legendary aspects of Shazam a little bit in a way he's done on basically every character he's worked on at DC. The biggest example, of course, is Green Lantern. Let's take this concept and just fold it all the way out. And it looks like he's going to maybe explore some of that, which is something cool that could make his Shazam book unique and different. And, so I'm interested to see where he's going. It didn't super wow me, but I'll probably keep checking it out.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, I'm not going to give up on a Shazam book, no matter what, basically. It's going to have to be like, it's going to have to start like really offending me to get me to back out on it or to stop picking it up. But man, it's just a bummer. I feel like this is the chance to be like the big book. And that was kind of how I felt with the New 52 thing when they were like, oh, we're going to introduce Shazam. It's going to be new. Jeff Johns going to
I think DC realizes that. That's why Jeff Johns is on it.
Yeah. I mean, and this is the only thing he's doing besides Doomsday Clock. And we got a question about Doomsday Clock.
Is he writing three Jokers? Or
supposedly.
But that's just coming out.
It hasn't even been like solicited.
I think they want it completely done before they even solicit. Good. It. Yeah.
Good. Well, I mean, and like, oh boy. Doomsday Clock, I think, would be like a whole other discussion. I've only read the first couple issues. Somebody asked us this on Twitter, if what we think of Doomsday Clock or if we're keeping up
I'm kind of waiting to read it when it's done. Maybe we can talk about it when it's done.
You know, honestly, it's like, it's, I think that it's good so far, and at least that I'm kind of interested to see what he's doing. I'm definitely, overall, the big story, I want to know what happens.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But the individual issues have got pros and cons. I think that it's, what I've read so far has felt like, it's taking time, not because the story needs it, but because they want it to be 12 issues.
So that it's more like Watchmen.
Yeah. It's like a little bit.
I've only read the first issue.
There's been some stuff in there where I felt like this, you're kind of padding this out, but maybe not. Maybe it's, I don't ever want to discount without having read the whole thing.
Yeah. We don't know where he's going with.
We don't know. So, and I'll
I'd definitely be down to talk about it once
we've really read it.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the art's great, of course. But again, this is a thing where I'm like, you guys had this in the pipeline for so long. And it's like, where's the breakdown? And I know I'm definitely not trying to give anybody a hard time. I know that stuff happens and it's hard. And
I definitely appreciate, them sticking.
I want Gary Frank to draw. I don't care how long it takes. I would rather him keep doing it than have like weird fill-in stuff. I would always rather the real artist that, has the vision for the thing that has been working on it. But I just wish that they could kind of find a way to get some of these things planned. I mean, maybe it's just a planning thing.
Yeah. It didn't need to come out maybe as early as it did.
Yeah. But I mean, I get that there was all this stuff going on. There's a lot of moving parts to running a giant multimedia comic company. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, whoever asked that, I can't remember, it's about Doomsday Clock. We'll get to it once we've kind of read more of it, but thank you for the question. What I wanted to say, speaking of, throwing in a bunch of extra stuff to a first issue that adds, in the Mary Marvel case, I loved it. It really added something, and it being at the back end of the book really saved me, like put me in a good mood when I finished that one up, where I'm like, hey, okay, this book, I'm looking forward to the next issue of that, where in a way that if it had just stopped, I would not have. But man, you want to talk about just throwing some filler in something that completely puts a bad taste in your mouth for the entirety of the book is Uncanny X-Men number one. Now, longtime listeners of this show and other shows will know I'm a huge, huge X-Men fan. I love the X-Men. One of my favorite properties, set of characters of all time. That Uncanny X-Men number one, which was like $10, $8, $10.
That sounds right. It was $8 to $10.
It was at least $8. It was at most $10. Just to like bilk that, man, the backups in that, and I'll include some pictures in the show notes of this. The backups in that were atrocious. Hmm. And it's, I don't mean just from an art standpoint.
So this is one that I've not read, but you have read. Yeah.
The main story is, first of all, the main story looks great. Mahmoud Esrar, who did Supergirl, has done a bunch of other stuff. He's one of my favorite artists. No idea if I'm saying his name right.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. But I do like his art a lot, though.
He's just absolutely incredible. And if you're not following him on Instagram, you should do yourself a favor and do that, because he posts so much art on there. He's like a guy who's really prolific and is.
Was he drawing the X-Men some when Bendis was on X-Men?
Switching, I think there might have been. Eminem? Yeah. He did a couple issues in there. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long of a run it was, but on All New X-Men.
All New X-Men. Doing that. Yeah, the younger team.
He was great on there. His art in this is great. There's literally like, there's a part in there where the Mutant Liberation Front from X-Force, from the Rob Liefeld X-Force shows up.
So the main story you liked.
Well.
Or you liked how it was drawn.
I liked how it was drawn, and it was okay. I was like, yeah, I'm interested to see where this goes. But it was just regular comic length. It's the best the MLF have ever looked.
Okay.
which kudos to that. He makes them look like impressive, cool characters. And I was just like, good for you guys. But then I also did love that there's a part in there where it's like, then the, some of the like X-Men kids basically end up having to fight these guys due to a series of unfortunate events. They have to fight these guys. And like the way that one of the kids, I think it's Armor, completely just dunks on these guys for being so like, look, we're not going to get beat by you, you know, lame, like some Wolverine ripoff, you know, like we're going to, some of that stuff was great. There's some great moments in it. And I liked, I was into the story of like trying to see where it was going. Then you've got these backups that look like there's a, one of them's about Bishop, and I don't know what kind of gun he's supposed to be holding, but it's like in every panel, he's holding it in a different way, which is not a way a human being would hold a weapon. Of it, it's just odd.
The artist is not comfortable drawing.
I guess a person. I don't know what the deal was, but it's just like. But, and then both of them.
Remember the gun was really heavy, so Bishop was having to shift.
I can
like,
show you the man. I can show you the pictures, and it's like,
when you're carrying like a real heavy something that costs, and you have to kind of change. I got to change how I'm gripping it. I got to carry this thing. Let's try grabbing it this way.
I want to post the pictures of this in the show notes so you guys can see what I'm talking about. But it is like, it's pretty hilarious. But yeah. Just the fillerness, the filler feeling of the backup stuff that's in there that's supposed to be going along just completely ruins the rest of the comic. And it's like you padded out this comic to bump the price up, and it shows that this is just meaningless. Like it's not good. I mean, it hurts me to say that, but it's like, man, I feel like I'm being cheated here. You are charging people an exorbitant amount for this thing because you're going, oh, look at all this extra stuff you're getting. And then all that extra that you're getting is like, so not worth it. It's like, this could have been just a good first issue of just the main story, and that would have been fine, but they want to get that number one money. And they know, it's why they don't do it on issue two. They don't put a two or three backups in issue two.
Right.
Because people aren't going to buy it. They're like, oh, we got to get this number one money. And that's just a, man, I want comics to stop bumming me out so much.
Yeah.
Dude, there's none of this nonsense in Cosmic Ghost Rider. I'll just say that.
No, it's all no filler, all meat.
Yeah.
So this Uncanny X-Men number one, if I'm understanding,
I haven't read it seems like there's been like 15 issues out in the last month.
Well, it's weekly, so there's been four or five maybe at this point. They're doing it weekly at least for a time, and they're calling it Disassembled, is that right?
Yeah.
And it's modeled after last year Avengers did a weekly No Surrender. 16 issues. Yeah. And so they kind of
Which also seemed like a thrown together mess.
They dissolved all of their other Avengers books, USA Avengers, Uncanny Avengers, Adjectiveless Avengers. They dissolved it all into this one series and to have it weekly. And I think we kind of came away from that one differently. I enjoyed it. You didn't really enjoy it.
Well, it's not even like, to me, it was not even so much like the story itself. It was like if there was something off about like how it was like, to me, like the way it was promoted and the way that it, like the way it was coming out, and just, it felt very, it felt like it was thrown together, like the quality of the story or the scale of the story did not to me feel like it warranted sort of getting rid of all those other books and trying to turn it into this thing where it's like, oh, you've got to buy this book every week now. Like you could have just told that story in regular Avengers, I think, and not had it take over the entire line. Because it seems like a ploy to me to go, oh, now we're selling more of Avengers than we are of Uncanny Avengers. How can we get all of these? How can we get people to buy all of these?
Yeah, I would agree. It definitely didn't need to be weekly. I would say probably no book does, just because it's a lot.
It probably
didn't need to be quite as long as it was. 16 issues is crazy long, but overall, I did enjoy it.
But 16 issues then gives you 3 months of sales where people are buying the entire thing. And that's probably a buffer for something else.
And I think it did well for Marvel too. And so I say all that because I think, isn't that what this X-Men's doing? The same thing, and not 16 issues. I think it's 10 or 12, but it's making it weekly. They've dissolved all the other X-Men books. No red, blue, or gold. It's just Uncanny X-Men now, and then that's going to run.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. The last issue of Red came out today. Blue and Gold's already ended.
Right.
You may still have... I think Astonishing X-Men's maybe ended too. I think it's all just dissolved into Uncanny. Now, you're always going to have other X-Men books on the stands. Yeah. There's way more to dissolve, but I think all the colored X-Men's, that sounds so weird, have ended. All the color-coded X-Men's
have ended. There we go.
So that they can do this, and then I guess it leads into the next thing.
Yeah. He was doing the art on X-Men Red also.
Yeah.
Which is also looks incredible. Just a great artist. So that part's good. But it's like nobody can do a weekly book. I think when something's weekly works is when it's like when the Superman books were weekly, those worked because each book was still only monthly, but it was like, mm-hmm. there was a Superman book every week and each one had its own sort of ongoing story and like its own flavor. That way. So it's like, yeah, you can get Superman every week, but it's a different thing.
Yeah.
And it's still, the creative team has a month to do it. So it doesn't feel quite as like churned out.
Yeah. I would say that's different. Like this is read to be like the one, it's just one series coming out super fast.
I was just so, it was such a, I hate for something that I'm like, oh, this could be exciting. A new Uncanny number mm-hmm. one, like let's get excited about this. And then it's like, oh, you guys are trying to rip us off. That's a bummer. So
would you say you would not recommend it or?
Nope.
Or when it shows up on Unlimited, just read the lead story.
Yeah. That's, I mean, honestly, wait until there's like a good bit of, and honestly, I wouldn't even wait, not even like as soon as it shows up on Unlimited, I would wait until the whole first.
Oh yeah, because if it's a 10 part something, you'd want to.
I'd wait for the whole thing to see. I mean, there's like, it's kind of interesting where the, I'm curious to see where they're going with
What would you say is the, or do you even know yet with just one issue, what's the overall premise of this story?
Maybe don't want to spoil.
Okay, fair enough.
But well, I don't know what the. I mean, okay, I take that back. All right, I can give you what the sort of plot is without this without spoiling anything. Is Jean Grey, you know, is back, which that happened already. She's been back for a while, but now it's like the whole thing of this is. Oh, and this again feels like. I would say that the main story was, just like it was pretty good. Not even like, oh, that part was good and then mm-hmm. the rest was bad. I was just kind of like, there was parts, I hate reading comics and rolling my eyes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where there's stuff like, okay, yeah. But the idea is that Jean Grey's back. She's trying to put together an X-Men team. Like, oh, the world feels so divided. And not that this is a bad thing to have comics sort of reflect the current times. And I'm definitely not saying like that they should stay away from socio-political sure. issues, but I think you have to handle that stuff really carefully.
And so it doesn't feel preachy
or doesn't come off like tone deaf or mm-hmm. just awkward or make you roll your eyes.
And they don't quite get there.
No.
Okay.
Not all the way to bad, but there, and the premise is neat. It's not, again, it's just, man, how you handle stuff makes all the difference in the world. And so the idea is she's wanting to put together a new team that's going to help. And she's like, the world, there's so much problems in the world. I want to try to fix it. We can't just mm-hmm. whatever. And so she gets together all these people, smart people and like important people, people with like, oh, all of you are. There's like a whole thing. And the reason this is all like I'd start rolling my eyes at this is because ultimately nothing in the status quo is actually going to change. You can't do this in comics, like in a big shared universe. If this was like, it's just like, if this was like One Punch Man, you know, some manga where it's its own universe, mm-hmm. you could have the world completely change. And then that's all you have to deal with. But it's like, you know that nothing in the Marvel universe is going to change from this. It can't.
Yeah.
And so when she's like, she gets all these people together and she's like, I want to make the world a better place, but I don't know how. So I need to borrow all of your minds. And she basically, she gets them all in a room. And it's like, all right, everybody, I'm going to read all your minds at once or whatever, and come up with this brilliant plan to save everything and to change the world for the better. I go, man, I would rather just see them dealing with, oh no, the juggernaut. Like, because you know you're not really going to up and change the world in these comics.
Yeah, that's
like,
that so don't, suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, don't even pretend. Unless you're really going to do it.
Right.
And you're not. You know, like, if you want to do something really, like House of M or something where it's like, hey, we really did get rid of all the mutants. And then you go, okay.
Yeah.
Great. But this is like, this is one.
There's some of that same in but Fantastic she wants to do Four that with Reed Richards with his solve everything.
Yeah.
Like, well, if you really solve everything, then that's the end of all the books because there's no more conflict. There's no more.
Yeah. But that was handled much better.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, I bought, because I wasn't like, with Reed doing that, one, I think that Jonathan Hickman is.
So Jonathan Hickman picked up that story. The one that first laid it down, though, was when J. Michael Straczynski was on it. And that was not handled as well.
Yeah.
But then he kind of picked up that concept and ran with it and made it into something really
cool. And the fact that that's like, I remember him as being the one sort of more responsible for that, I guess, tells you who handled it better.
Exactly.
because that's what stuck in my mind is like so it's a cool premise. That's the thing is it's like, it's fine if you want to do a cool premise, but you can't have a cool premise that we know you can't achieve. We have to be able to suspend our disbelief to get to whatever you're trying to pitch at us.
Right. I guess we'll have to see. Time will tell how well that's executed.
Well, and of course, it's like in the first issue, something goes terribly wrong. That's like, oh, now everybody's going to be mad at the mutants again. And I won't spoil that.
Yeah.
And it's not even, and that's not even the most, that's not the big spoiler for the, you know, the ending. But it's just it's basically, it seems like a whole, but they have all this stuff where it's like, of course they can't tell us what the plan is because then you'd have to be clever enough to come up with a plan that's going to change the world. And it's like, well, you're just writing funny books.
Right.
You're not really like, so she, the way that they keep talking about, and this is what also just,
if you can really solve world hunger, you should not be a comic book writer.
Yeah. Stop it.
You shouldn't be.
you need to get to the UN immediately.
Yeah.
But there's like parts where she, you know, she comes up with her plan and she's like, oh, all of you, thank you so much. Now I know what I need to do. And then she's like, trying to put the team that she wants together. And she's like telling people, but she's like, I have this idea. And like, and then she's like, let me show you. And it's like, you know, she's talking to Nightcrawler and she psychics something into his head. Yeah. And then he's just like, it cuts, you know, then it's like back to him and he's like single tear. And he's like, oh, it's so beautiful, Gene. I see what you're going to do. I'm going to help, you know, but it's like, okay, what is it? And it's like, maybe they're trying to save it for the thing or whatever, but it's just,
The audience doesn't see.
Yeah, it's like, oh, she's going to do something to make things better. And like, oh, the mutants are going to try to work with whatever. She gives a speech at the UN and it's like, everybody, please trust us. We're going to try to do this or whatever. And it's like, yeah, okay, get to the part where something goes wrong. Because, of course, it's got to end with people don't know what to do with the X-Men other than everybody hates them.
See, I thought so.
Except for Grant Morrison.
I've not read it. Yeah, right. So I was sitting here listening to as you're describing that and then knowing that the title is Disassembled, and where I thought you were going to say is I've read everyone's mind. I've seen how to fix the world, and it's, we've got to disassemble the X-Men. That's not it. Cause that would be a good shocking last page. Like, how we save the world is we quit. No more X-Men.
Yeah. People hate us. People straight up hate us. You guys, we need to stop centralizing ourselves where they've got some place to send the missiles. We need to just kind of like, let's try to chill out. And there's like a thing in there, I think, about, if I'm remembering correctly, there's like a thing in there about like mutant cure again. But this time it's about like, oh Lord, I think they're trying to like bring something into it about like how people identify. And I'm just like, hey guys, can y'all be real careful with this? Because this is like, if you get this wrong, it's gonna hurt people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
so people, not just mutants, but people that identify as mutants but aren't born.
It's not exactly that. I mean, it's not. There's stuff in there with, and there's stuff with like, always with the X-Men.
That's a tread lightly territory.
Yes. It's just, and always with the X-Men, there's that thing of like, hey, you can kind of sub the X-Men in for whatever sort of minority or under, what's the word I'm looking for?
I mean, disenfranchised.
Yeah, or like or people who have been mistreated, you know, sort of by society. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of wiggle room for that. And that's why, but it's like, if you start trying to make it too, I think sometimes it's like if you try to start making it too on the nose, it loses some of the universal appeal to disenfranchised people. Mm-hmm. It's like what appeals to them about the X-Men is like you can kind of.
You read yourself into it.
Yeah. And you, when you start getting too on the nose with some of it about like, I don't know.
Well, any metaphor.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
If you have to, this is exactly what it means. It's going to lose some of its power.
Yeah. And if you start drilling down onto it where you're going like, specifically here, we're talking about, you know, this is clear. This is a metaphor for gay or this is a metaphor for trans or what. It's like, not that I'm not saying that I don't want to see that stuff dealt with in comics. I'm just saying in some of these particular examples, if it's a little bit broader, it lets more people see themselves in the story. And I think that that's good. If more people are able to, more minorities or people who have, you know, are able to see themselves in it. So, yeah, again, it's just that thing. It's all in how you handle it. Yeah. And maybe this will turn around. And it, I mean, there's people involved in this that I think are good. But it also does feel like there's things like, you know, it's an editorial decision to add all that back, those backup things that are like, feel very rushed and don't feel as the same quality level as the main story. And real quick before we wrap this up, I have to ask, because I don't think we've actually gotten a chance to really talk about it. The Fantastic Four are back.
They're back.
You're the Fantastic Four guy, man. You are the number one Fantastic Four guy in my mind. And, you know, we've had a chance for there to be a couple issues now. I think there's been three issues, plus two and one is still going on or almost finished.
Two and one's final issue has come out. I've not read it yet.
What was that issue you got today? Was that Fantastic Four number four?
It was a wedding special. So we're four issues in to Fantastic Four. I think number five, which is also going to be legacy number 650, is going to be the wedding of Ben Grimm and Alicia Masters. They're going to make it a big wedding special. This is a wedding special, I guess, leading up to that, all the stuff leading up to the big wedding anniversary issue.
A wedding special where the wedding does not happen.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Right. And so... very recently, X-Men did the exact same thing with the wedding of Colossus and Kitty
Pryde. People did not respond well to that.
And not to spoil that issue, but they did this special leading up to it. And I didn't even read it because the reviews hit me so hard that this is garbage. Right. Don't waste your time. This one I picked up largely. It's Fantastic Four. But then also it's Dan Slott and Gail Simone. Or some of the credits among multiple credits. I saw this and said, well, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
So, the Fantastic Four are back. I've enjoyed it for the most part. Really enjoyed Marvel 2-in-1. I've read all but I think the very last issue of Marvel 2-in-1, and it's one of my favorite books of the year.
2-in-1 is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It. I just think it was really good.
I think I've only read like the first five issues of 2-in-1.
Mm-hmm.
They're not back yet in where I'm at 2-in-1.
Okay.
And I think I've only read the first three issues of the actual Fantastic Four book. I've liked both of them, but I mean, I really wanted to get.
Yeah, kind of your take. So I think it's good. I think Dan Slott's gonna do a good job with it. I'm curious to see. Yeah, curious to see where they go with it.
Yeah.
I've liked everything I've read so far. I'm on board for it. I think the thing I'd messaged you earlier this week or last week that is kind of surprising that it doesn't seem like it's had that big impact on the rest of the Marvel universe, though. Like how, I don't know. I don't know what I wanted. You know, certainly we don't need another big event.
Yeah.
For them to.
But now we just got that announcement yesterday that who really gave the Fantastic Four their powers or whatever.
There is another big event, but I don't know that that's just Fantastic Four. They're doing a lot of characters that way.
Please, comic people, stop trying to change origins.
Yeah.
Like, just do something good. Move forward.
Yeah.
Like,
but anyway, I
don't care who blew up Krypton. I don't care how the Fantastic Four got their powers. It's not the point. I don't care who shot Batman's parents. I don't care. Yeah. I don't care, you know, why the lightning struck the chemicals. I don't care about any of that stuff. It's like, just show me the thing. Show me the character that I like. It's their origins are not what really matters, except maybe Spider-Man, like where you go, oh, great power, great responsibility. Yeah. His Uncle Ben dies. You need that. But it's not, I don't need to know that like the criminal who did it was part of a Hydra plot to do what, that's the past.
Yeah.
Hey, we're going this way now into the future, especially with the Fantastic Four. Anyway. So that's comic stuff. Hope you guys enjoyed
it. And we can maybe talk about some of these other things if next week we do like a best of 2018 absolutely. Kind of thing.
So thank you guys for listening. All of that stuff. Follow Matt at XAMattDrain. Follow me at TheChrisHaley. At KICTM Podcast. KeepItCloseToMe.com. It's got all the show notes, all that stuff. Patreon.com/TheChrisHaley. Thank you guys so much. And we love you guys. Thank you so much. Thank you. And I don't know how I end it. Here's this.